Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za. Market update on Kaya Biz.
As mentioned, it's not looking very pretty when it comes to the stock exchange, the performance locally and what we see abroad. The All Share Index in the red by more than 1%. It was worse earlier on today. We were weaker by more than 2%, but the All Share Index closing at 79,577 points. Weakness right across the board, though. Resources down by just shy of 1.5%. Financials down by 1.5%. Metals and mining also down by 2%. So, quite a calamity and a bloodbath. Internationally, as mentioned, it's all about the Nikkei. What we saw is a response there to capital flight and anxiety around that central bank increasing interest rates and the concerns around the currency weakness being the Japanese yen. And now the Nikkei falling by more than 12% in the red. 12%. Let that sink in. But certainly not a cause for panic or concern. European and US markets also seeing a significant decline there. As mentioned, the last few headlines I saw was the fact that we are in for what was deemed to be a painful week. Looking at our local major moves up and down, earlier during the course of the day when I looked at the major share prices up and down, the top 10 major moves in positive territory, there were only, four companies that were there from the top 40 are now really quite mixed. Large decline that we see largely in mining houses, platinum and gold stocks, Impala Platinum, DRD Gold, Sibanye-Stillwater, all falling between 4 and 5%. A few of the stocks that tried to see some value, but certainly not moving too far enough, are funny enough. Those in the property space, and largely property stocks that have exposure to international markets, especially if you're thinking about Eastern Europe, Nepiroc, Vukile, Resilient, Fortress, as well as Hyprop, all local REITs that do have exposure to international markets. So interesting to see that some investors have been buying into those dips. Currency-wise, you've guessed it, we have seen a decline to the US dollar. Earlier this morning on Seize the World, when I shared the business update, we were trading around 1840 to the US dollar, now at 1853 to the greenback. But bear in mind, that is as an influence of the movements we see in the dollar and some panic selling in terms of the US dollar and that particular currency. To the pound, we're at 23.69, the euro at 20.31. Let's unpack this for you now and so much more with a good friend and colleague of ours here on the show, Roy Mudoni, who's an analyst at Sanlam Investments. And Roy, like many other South Africans, I was monitoring the markets. I was tweeting and sharing a few thoughts and made a interesting day in the office. And markets go up, but markets also go down. You often remind me that down is also a direction, right?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, absolutely. Down is a direction. And particularly, if you've gone as high up as we've gone in international markets, the more these shares went up, the higher the probability that they'll come down. And these things don't happen gradually. They go up until they don't go up anymore and lapse. And it's definitely been a very interesting couple of weeks. And I guess we can go through a few of the narratives that I think probably drove the market, and we see what's going to happen.
Let's talk about it, because it seems as though we were fine with the Fed keeping rates unchanged last week Wednesday. In Japan, they actually increased interest rates to try to reposition the economy in terms of the concerns that they have. And then on Friday we got the non-farm payroll figures coming out of the US. So east or west, seems like there's a lot of panic on the market front overall.
So I think you have to think of it as a confluence of three issues: macro matter, geopolitics, and stretched valuations, all combining to create this whole panic, jittery investor scenario where everyone jumps for the exit. Remember, in life, if you're going to panic first. Mm-hmm. If you're not first, you're going to be caught in the stampede.
Ah.
But maybe let's go through what actually happened. 2 weeks ago, most investors felt we were in for a soft landing, and we discussed this with you. Soft landing, one rate cut, very small chance of a hard landing, and effectively all that would happen is we go into a cutting cycle, and then we go into now a new growth cycle. That was one. At that time, the most crowded trade, where most investors were, was in the Magnificent Seven, because these were the only ones that were showing they had earnings growth, which was AI driven. But on the macro side, what was happening is all the high frequency data was showing a slowing economy, which is what you expect when rates are this high. The whole point of hiking rates is cooling off the economy. So as this data started coming in, and as the Magnificent Seven reported and started casting doubts as to when AI will make money, investors figured, no, this is probably not the place to be. Maybe we should sell off some of these Magnificent Seven, buy value stocks and buy small cap stocks, and then life is perfect, right? Mm. And we saw a little bit of that happen. Then two big things happened. So the non-farm payrolls, like you said, happened. But there's one major driver which hasn't been spoken about a lot, which is the whole issue in Japan.
Yes.
So just to explain that, over the long term, the Japanese central bank has kept interest rates at pretty much zero.
Yep.
Japan's got a lot of savings. They've got an elderly population who don't spend. So typically what they do is you'll export your capital, invest it in U.S. assets for argument's sake. In addition, global investors can borrow in Japan for zero, mm-hmm. and then go and invest in places where interest rates are higher, South Africa, Mexico, and especially the U.S. now. You're getting dollar returns of 5-6%, and your cost is zero. So that was what was called the carry trade. And people did this trade for a very long time. But what did the Japanese do? They decided to hike rates. The market expected them to, because the yen was weakening faster than expected, but they only expected a 10 basis point hike. What came out was 25 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, all of these investors, wherever they are faced with a cost of capital and maybe the margin calls, so they had to sell their assets, come and cover their margin, and in doing that, what you see is that the yen starts strengthening. So even the local Japanese start bringing their money back. That reduces liquidity. And then you combine that with all the fright we saw around non-farm payrolls and everything.
Yes.
Then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then the biggest thing, which is more, I would say, anecdotal than anything else, Warren Buffett comes out, Berkshire Hathaway sold half his Apple holdings, and now he has, I don't know, just under $270 billion in cash. The average investor looks at this, puts two and two together, and figures they can't be in the market. And I think that's what we saw between Friday and today. There's also geopolitics, there's an issue in the Middle East. Everything's jittery. And when things happen this way, all it takes is just one false move or one panic-stricken investor, and we see markets selling off in this way.
And that's the concern, right? And that I guess we need to address for us as retail investors, because we have our pension funds invested here. We have our investment portfolios also addressed here. And this typically does lead to a heightened level of anxiety for retail investors and even portfolio managers, perhaps. Help us contextualize this to alleviate and I guess remove the panic from the market.
I think the way to think about this is, first of all, you're invested in actual companies. These stocks are real companies where there's management, employees, and people out there who tomorrow, regardless of the share price, will go out and do what they need to do to run these businesses, to add value and to keep growing and to deal with higher or lower interest rates, stronger or weaker rand and everything. Things don't change on a dime the way it looks like today. What happened today was a change in sentiment in financial markets. Yes, the macro may have changed, but you have to trust that these companies continue to do what they need to do in the new environment. And it goes back to what we've always said. Do your own research. Understand why you're invested in these businesses. Make sure when you're investing that the price you're paying is low relative to the earning power. So you've got a bit of margin of safety, because these things happen. But over the long term, if the right management team in a broad number of industries and you entered at a relatively cheap price, you will in all likelihood do well. The problem is when you follow the herd, you buy Nvidia in February, because these things only go up, and then when it crashes now, it's down, I don't know, 20% off the peak. What
locked
do you
in
do?
Your losses. Exactly. And that's also the reason why we shouldn't panic. I'll tell you what, Roy, we're going to take a quick ad break, but we're going to come back just to extend this conversation further. I do want us to dig deep into, again, as you say, the nuances we do see coming out of Japan, but also a focus on the US, especially as we are headed to the elections. But as you've mentioned, no need to panic. This is just part of the dynamic. Yes, the macroeconomic themes might have changed given the shifts we've seen in economic data from the US, as well as an increase in interest rates in Japan. But you've quality companies, this is just another blip in the chart that we'll have to ride out. And of course, we're extending our markets conversation, and we will build up onto this within the first hour of the show, but thought that we really just add more perspective as to why we're seeing the markets sell off as they are today. As Roy mentioned, Roy Mutoni, who joins us as our market analyst from Sanlam Investments, he's given us some clarity that it's really just a shift in the dynamics of not being able to access cheaper capital in what's described as a carry trade in Japan, and of course moving that money into other markets. And the same concerns exist within the US, where it does appear as though the economy could dip into a recession. And Roy, I can imagine you must be responding to a lot of client concerns and calls. I'm glad that you've alleviated us from the pressure that, hold on, no need to panic. As long as you've made some good quality investments and diversified your portfolio, you'll be fine. But let's talk about the US, because I think the US carries a lot more interesting nuances as we head to the polls in November. And looking at the headlines, $2 trillion US dollars wiped off the US stock exchange. Big number, big red screens we see and screenshots on our phones. This certainly makes for an intriguing time, because a lot of people are calling for an emergency meeting by the Fed.
The truth is, I guess you have to take two perspectives. First of all, the economy can sink an election. Make no mistake about that. I think if you recall, George Bush, the elder George Bush, had just won the Iran-Iraq war. I mean, had just invaded Iraq, liberated Kuwait. She was totally untouchable. And then the economy collapsed, and that's what opened the doors for Bill Clinton. And George Bush the first became a one-term president. So the economy is incredibly important. But I think we have to be rational at this point in time. Interest rates were hiked aggressively. This was probably the fastest hiking cycle you've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently at very high rates relative to recent history. And the economy was going to slow down. And without a doubt, when you contract credit in that way, the economy is going to slow down. But what do we have right now? What we have is they're still creating jobs. They created 120,000 on this payroll. So on average, on a rolling basis, it's still, I mean, the labor market is not in trouble. It's weakening, and unemployment is rising, but it's only at about 4%. At the time of the GFC, what you had was unemployment getting to like 10%, and you had a credit issue. It's not clear yet whether there have been any of these issues. And none of this has emerged over the past few days. And right now, the Fed has many more tools to deal with market liquidity and credit issues that they emerge, and we'll see that happening. Why do they need to have an emergency meeting? You'd only have an emergency meeting to cut rates or inject liquidity into the market. That's not the problem we're seeing right now. There are no bankruptcies. There are no bonds. There's nobody who's defaulted. There's no bank that's seen a bank run yet. So I think the call is very premature. September is on its way. They've got two inflation readings that will still come through. The feeling that they're behind the curve is logical, and it's probably right. But like we said last week, you're trying to land an aircraft, you're trying to land a Boeing 747 on a coin. You're going to make mistakes. But the thing is, does this mistake take us to negative 3% GDP growth over the next couple of years? Highly unlikely. I think what you probably see is market calming down, a little bit of liquidity coming through, and sanity prevailing over the next couple of weeks. And then that September cut comes in. I don't think it's in the interest to double down on their cut, say go 50 or 75 basis points, because they're not addressing the real issue. When you cut interest rates, it takes time to seep into the market. When you go 25 basis points in small increments, you're telling the market, yes, we can see, you need credit, we know credit is expensive, we are coming down slowly. That's the message they want to send, and that's probably what you're going to see, unless something else comes that we haven't seen over the past week.
Ooh, and you know that that's a possibility. The last few weeks have been filled with many surprises on the political front and economics, but we're holding steady nonetheless. Let's bring it closer to home as to what it means for us here, Roy. The All-Share Index and largely mineral metals and mining stocks and resource stocks a lot weaker for today. Banks and financial stocks, which have been on a fantastic rally, also having taken a beating. Maybe let's just start on the overall market performance before we get into the likes of Telkom.
I think South Africa is a small open economy. We feel all the pressure through the currencies, and money comes in and goes out at an institutional basis pretty much as much as is needed. I think we are one of the top 10 or top 15 traded currencies, and the rand trades multiples out there. So we were never going to escape unscathed. But here's the thing. What we've been saying over the past 1 year or so is that our stocks are cheap. Our yields are high. So our market isn't as expensive as the U.S. by any level of the imagination. So, yes, I would imagine anybody who was playing the carry trade here would have sold out today and gone to go cover their shorts wherever they were.
Mm.
So that basically has happened, and we've seen that. But you see significant value in very liquid stocks right now. What has changed with the banks? Nothing, really. What has changed with the industrials? Really nothing. Maybe the currency moved a little bit, but the valuations remain cheap. We are all depending on GDP growth improving gradually over the next few years, our interest rates coming down and inflation being maintained at reasonable levels. So, yes, there has been a broad-based sell-off, but that's more a liquidity thing than anything else. The valuation, the attractive valuation still exists. The outlook still remains the same. I mean, our concern would be if the GNU didn't work out or if load shedding came back or things like that. Right now, we're in a fix-it phase that seems to be working out. And that's why investors should start looking for opportunities, both in our bonds and in our equities as well.
Now you're speaking my language, because I've always been reminded that when you see a sell-off on the markets, it's like a sale. And you know, women in shopping, I fall into that category. Not just for shoes and handbags, but also for equities. So where should we be looking for value? And I get it, it's quite an unfair and very broad question. But, you know, is there value that we should be tapping into right now?
Like I mentioned, if you look at the big banks, we're not overpaying for them. Look at some of our industrial companies like Motors, all of those ones trading at very low multiples. You look at look at things like Bidvest, or some of these small and mid cap, well managed companies with 5% and 6% dividend yields, solid cash generation. This is the time that you look at those and you move with them. The property sector has been sold off quite aggressively historically, but right now when you look at interest rates coming down, there's probably a little bit of an underpin there. You look whether it's the ones that are investing in Eastern Europe or the Europe ones that are exclusively in retail here. So this is the time that you sharpen your pencil and you look around and you ask those hard questions. If I bought five next couple of years, does management have a solid track record? Are they overly geared? Are their margins solid? Can their margins expand? And what opportunities do they have in this new South Africa, as we call it? So, yeah, I think the ideal thing for an investor right now is step away from the computer, shut down the screen.
Yeah.
Walk out into that winter, relax, come back tomorrow, look where share prices are,
yep,
and start doing your work. There is no rush.
definitely. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because, you know, for us, though, in broadcasting, this is a fantastic business story, because it reminds me of, like, you know how Richard Quest from CNN would always be dramatic about market declines like this. It's a bloodbath, the market calamity, complete decline on the bourse. But as you're saying, yes, it is just for a day. But the long term wave is certainly what we need to ride out. I'm going to close it off very briefly. If we can talk about Telkom, they came out with a trading statement. And as we know, over the years, they've really gone through a significant reshuffle and reorganization in their business.
So this is an example of, in a day like this, you can get good news. So the Telkom result is actually quite solid in my mind. Only a quarter, but really solid. So I think they beat what we were all expecting on EBITDA margins. Their EBITDA margins are up above 25. Remember, there's a time they've gone down below 20.
Yes.
They continue to spend CapEx, 15%. Of sales went into CapEx, which is a significant number. Just shows you the confidence they have in their business. In their fiber to the home segment, they were able to pass over a million more homes, and 50% of those signed up, and they expanded margins there. So this is a result that actually looks quite solid for a company that's trading relatively cheaply. Clearly, it's just the first quarter. Most likely there's a high base involved here, but it's definitely one that warrants a second look. The management team seems to have come into themselves. They seem to understand what's going on, and they have a plan. Mm-hmm. You've got a business that they've sold. That business, the cash will come back in when the deal is done. That will reduce their debt levels. And you'll see them come, you'll see the business start to grow again. So I think solid result, better than expected, well worth watching.
Well worth watching, definitely. An intriguing week we have ahead of us. Just when we thought August would be a quiet one, here we are with some interesting news factors. But as you've said again, Roy, and I'll continue to reiterate it, no need for us to panic. Part of the waves, and we ride them out. Thank you so much for your time, as always.
Always a pleasure, Gugu. All the best.
Thank you so much, Roy. That's Roy Mutoni, analyst at Sanlam Investments, giving us an update on the market declines that we have seen today. And as he's always described it, when the markets go up, it's fantastic news. There's excitement about new all-time highs that we're touching. And on days like today, where the Nikkei has gone to levels we haven't seen in over 30 years, where we see a bear market creeping in, the U.S. equities also selling off, concerns about the Federal Reserve having to cut interest rates sooner. Yes, it does cause panic, but down is also a direction.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.